Okay, we got Phil Shane today on the sportscast. It's March 5th, 2018. Phil, how are you?
I am enjoying a rare day off. It doesn't happen much this time of year, but recharging the batteries.
Phil, you are one of my favorite announcers on BN Sport. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, I grew up down in South Florida, which is, again, just coincidental that that's where I've been able to do what I love. So, but grew up, I guess, the typical American sports fan, followed pretty much every top four sport that was out there. I remember watching the NBA playoffs when they were on tape delay and the Stanley Cup when it was on PBS. So it was one of those situations, though, that back in the mid-70s, speaking of PBS, kind of strange that that was one of the main sources for sports back then, but they had a couple of recap shows, highlight shows from Germany and England, and I started to fall in love with the beautiful game. And then the Strikers came, fell in love, but somewhere along the way, the world changed, and I was lucky to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I remember when you were on ESPN, when you were covering the U.S. national team. I think it was in like the late 90s, right?
Let me think back. Let's see. I was in line, but towards the end of the line, because I kind of got a late start in regard to the World Cup in 94. I do that for a radio network that went around the nation and did some games up in Orlando, which was an amazing experience. But by getting in touch with them at that point, when Major League Soccer came around the next year, I was fortunate enough to be considered and blessed enough to be selected. So it was, again, just a little bit of fortune and good timing and a lot of blessing along the way.
Yeah. So now that the Miami Beckham team has been formally announced, what are your thoughts so far? I mean, it's been a process of 4 years.
It's been a while. I guess the first thought is, and I know there's a lot of doubters out there, including probably some inside Major League Soccer itself, which is one of the reasons it's taken so long. But if you were down in South Florida, I think you know the problem that happened with the fusion. I think you also realize that the reason that the Strikers back in the original NASL left had nothing to do with the support of the outdoor team. There just was no indoor facility. So South Florida may be getting a little bit of a bad rap. But when you take a look at what's happened now, because of what happened specifically with the fusion, they wanted to make sure that everything was ready, and specifically on the financial side, because you take a look at the stadiums, they were able to stick with it, but they were waiting for the big hitters to step up and join David Beckham and join Marcelo Claure and company. And the fact that they ended up getting the Moss brothers involved is not just money, but it's also local politics. And when you take a look at something similar that happened up in New York, hopefully we're not waiting that long to get a stadium, but it wasn't really until the Yankees got involved. So even with all of the money that, Manchester City had, they wanted to have the Steinbrenners, et cetera, someone that had the local political clout to get things done. And we've seen even with that, the difficulties that have happened up in New York, I don't think it'll be that difficult. And if you know anything about this region, you know that there are probably more hardcore soccer fans from a variety of cultures and a variety of backgrounds in South Florida than anywhere in the United States. This means it's an opportunity. It also means it's going to be a challenge, because you can't just open up shop, roll out the carpet, and expect people to continue to come. We saw that with the fusion, and that was one of the problems. You need to get good players. You need to get a good coach. You need to stay connected to the community. You can't try and take advantage of them as though they're the golden goose and wring every single dollar out of them, especially if you're not giving something back in return. So I don't think it's a guaranteed success, but if they go through this with the same consideration that I think David Beckham has to this point, put the right pieces of the puzzle into place. I have a feeling that this will be, before too long, maybe the cornerstone franchise of the league, or at least the launching pad for the next generation of Major League Soccer. I think what we've seen in Atlanta has built on what we saw in the Pacific Northwest, what we saw in Toronto, and I think, again, if they do it right, I think that Miami could take it to another level that many MLS fans can't even ponder at the moment.
I remember a few years ago you were saying this very true about like the whole demographic of South Florida. It's so diverse that going from Miami to Hollywood is a big difference. And
it is. And also I think another thing which is a positive is that core audience that is going to be open to soccer in the first place. And, I mean, there's going to be the soccer moms out there. That's everywhere. There's going to be the ethnics out there. That's everywhere. There's going to be the young professionals. But I think there's almost a perfect mix. Over the last 10 years since the Fusion, a little even longer than that, since the Fusion left, Miami has gotten younger. Miami has gotten more technological. I mean, Miami and elsewhere around the globe, but also the people that have called South Florida home. And as you point out, be it South Florida on the map, you have all of these little enclaves. And I don't think you can do what MLS has tried to do in the past, to try and, okay, we have to get a Jamaican player, an Argentinian player, a Brazilian player, a Haitian player. I mean, if you can get those players who can play, that's a plus. I think, the one thing that we know, if you follow soccer down here, is it is an educated audience, and they care more about what's in the boots than the color of the passport. So if they can get the right players involved, I think that those fans, regardless of where they live and regardless of where they're from, will give it a chance.
Now, the U.S. soccer presidency elections happened a few weeks ago. What are your thoughts? It feels like most of the youth associations didn't want much change.
Well, I'm not exactly sure if that's 100% right. I think what they want, and you have to remember they had a significant portion of the vote, and that's one of the reasons why. And it was strange because I was kind of following along the crest, listening to, well, promotion, relegation. And I agree, there is never going to be a better chance in our lifetime, probably, to speed up the clock in that direction. And you're getting excited about some of the conversation that is going on with Eric Winalda and Kyle Martino and the like. I think that when you take a look at, because of what she represented, but I think that she's been an amazing made an amazing contribution to soccer in this country in regards to professionalism. There is a passion involved, and we have to remember this is not a charity. We've had generations, decade upon decade, where you could kind of come in and do whatever you wanted in the world of soccer with kind of a wild, wild west, and it didn't work. So they found a way to make it work. They found a way to keep the golden goose alive and to continue to build. But those people that were actually voting are administrators. They're the people that are there to make sure that the soccer balls show up, the referees show up, that things are run in an organized fashion, regardless of whatever level they're actually on, be it youth, adult, professional, etc. And I think what happened, barnstorming, going around the country and talking to these people where they live, and I think that maybe alleviated some of the concern. I think his resume gave them hope. But now that he actually has that position, I think it's very important as a leader like this that you have your feet on the ground, but you also need to have your head in the clouds a little bit. I had 20 years or so, and this is how we were for a while, but I think we're now at a point where the Federation needs to get back to its priority, which is helping soccer grow, and not just in one direction. And I think if he can provide leadership from his bully pulpit, I think it will be all the better for soccer in this country. I don't think it's just going to be one of those go-along, get-alongs. Not saying that was necessarily Sunil, but he was already on the same track that Major League Soccer and some were on basically since 1990, and at least since Alan Rothenberg, which has been great. But now I think it's time to broaden the horizon, broaden the playing field, And I really hope Carlos Cordero is able to do that.
Yeah, you know what I've noticed that like you either need a pro council vote to win or the athlete council to win.
And that's intriguing because you do have the youth and adult, which in some ways you'd figure would cover some of the similar concerns. But it was the athlete council that really showed the possibility that there was the possibility for some change. I don't think that they wanted to throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is maybe why they didn't jump on the revolution ticket moment. If the United States is able to hold on to this North American World Cup bid, that could be billions of dollars to the North American economy and hundreds of millions of dollars to the soccer economies in these three countries. And you can cure a lot of problems if your bank account is that big. A lot of people were talking about, well, we got $150 million in the bank from dating back to the World Cup and the Copa America Centenario. Why aren't we spending it? We're talking about a country of over 300 million people. $150 million does not go that far, and especially if you want to try and make it last generations. So, again, his immediate concern of trying to make sure that the North American bid wins against Morocco, which is not a given, but I still think that when it comes down to it, again, considering who's going to be voting on this, I think they might be upset, particularly they might be upset by certain things that have happened legally in the past. But I think in the end, these are people that are trying to find a way to, well, for lack of a better word, make some money. And I think that the United States has already proven it can hold a World Cup at that point, and in many ways still the most successful financially. And I think if there can be a few security concerns calmed, that the United States, Mexico, and Canada will have a pretty clear run. But again, we'll see. We have the general managers. I'm a little concerned in the fact that that looks like that's going to be directed, the connection will be specifically towards the CEO. Because while I said we need the president to step up to the microphone, to lay out a plan for the future, to lay out a goal for the future, I don't think it's a good thing if that presidency is just a figurehead. We don't want a dictator. We don't want a king or a monarch of any sorts. But we also don't just want a paper tiger either. We want someone that has some accountability and that has some vision.
Yeah, and, you know, back to the World Cup, yeah, there's going to be a whole different voting system. It's going to be all the countries will be voting rather than 12 people on a board. And I guess we'll I believe the voting thing will happen right before the World Cup.
It will, and that's, again, the immediacy of this. Similar to what we saw and you mentioned with the Athletes Council, there is a very good possibility that we will see some significant voting blocks. And if you wonder why FIFA politics is the way it is of late, why certain continents end up getting so many bids and berths and others don't, pretty much if you can keep Africa and Asia together, you win. That's over 50%. So even if those are areas where maybe you don't get the biggest financial concern, you don't get the biggest tactical, technical innovations. Politically, that's where the power is. So I think that that's something that the North American bid is going to need to try and make some inroads to. Obviously, Morocco being in Africa is going to have a natural contingent. Their ties to the Middle East will carry over into Asia a bit. There might be other concerns in regards to sticking it politically to the United States. So I do think there needs to be some soft sell as well as some hard sell involved here. But there is the possibility of voting blocks, and there's not a lot of time to get your argument out there at the moment.
You know, it'll be awesome to see the World Cup final at like these huge stadiums at Cowboy Stadium. Would be amazing. but and had like that huge huge monitor. Oh my gosh, that'd be awesome. But I think the final they're planning at Giant Stadium, as far as I remember. Now you're in Big N Sport. Feels like U.S. soccer is. I mean, U.S. is spoiled with soccer. Apparently, outside of us, it's hard to watch soccer. But here we have everything. I remember back in the day where I had to go to a bar to watch a game. Everything was closed circuit. Now it's in like your living room. How's it like to be at BN Sport? And so far, it's been a couple of years.
Well, yeah, going on, what, five now? And you're right. I remember some World Cup qualifiers from South America. And the one I'm remembering, I can't remember if it was World Cup qualifying or Copa Libertadores, but I remember going with one of my friends up towards Fort Lauderdale to try and catch a game that was on closed circuit. And by the time we got there, which was still probably a half hour before kickoff, the place was already jam-packed. We ended up having to go behind the restaurant. They stuck a TV on top of one of the delivery cars and still charge us money to sit there and watch it. But where things have gone from that point to this is just amazing. And like, for example, World Cup coming up, we have some friendlies on BN Sports coming up in the next few weeks. I know what Russia against Brazil, Nigeria against Poland. You look at Italy, Argentina, that would be an attractive game. And in the past, though, those would be matches where, again, as you're talking about, you go to the restaurant, maybe if you're lucky, pay-per-view. But now it's on a regular cable/satellite network. And even more so, I think what we're starting to see, and this is where BN Sports is trying to make some pretty big inroads, BN Sports Connect. I think a lot of the future is going to be in regards to the direct connection through the internet to the consumer. We've seen a little bit of that in regards to BN Sports has been towards the forefront of trying to make connections to get into people's households however they want. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that continue. I know other networks are putting out their direct subscription packages. Maybe that's something we will do, something we kind of do already in Canada and around also the world. I don't think people realize how big BN Sports are and continuing to grow, and we do want to try and stay at the forefront. I mean, heck, we even have Giphy pages now. If you want to just grab a highlight, you can do that rather than trying to scour through videotapes and the like. So, again, the world has changed, a baseball game or whatever was out there, to now seeing dozens and dozens, probably nearly 100 countries' championships available in one form or another here in the United States. What used to be a soccer desert is now perhaps the greenest oasis on the planet for this sport.
Exactly. I mean, I have FUBU TV. It's an online platform, and they have all the BN Sport Connects, the BN Sport Espanol, regular English. And I mean, to be honest, BN Sport almost has every league except the Premier League.
Well, we do have that, just not here in the States
that's right.
yet, so yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, and I know that Andy Gray, he's in BN Sport in Middle East / Europe, I think. I'm a huge, like, I listen to Talk Sport and Sky Sports, and I'm a huge soccer fan. And what have you seen the difference between the American announcer versus the British announcer?
I'd like to say that to each his own, everyone has their own taste. I think that I'm one of those people that grew up listening to the likes of Martin Tyler, John Motson, Brian Moore, who I loved calling so many great Arsenal games when I was a kid. And I could understand that when you grew up in many places in this country, was the sound of soccer. It was part of the difference. But I also grew up in South Florida, so I heard the likes of Tony Tirado and a lot of the commentary that came from Mexico and South America. So I kind of understand there's more than one way to skin a cat. There's more than one way to get this done. And what I try to do personally is, even just from a simple aspect of pronunciations, how is this name pronounced in its native tongue? How would, say, a typical American pronounce it? And try and come somewhere in between. So that way you understand regardless of where you're coming from. And just to try and show a little bit of respect to that, show a little bit of respect to the sport. I think what's happened over the last two decades plus with Major League Soccer is similar to what I was able to experience with the World Cup and then the very early days of MLS. There is a belief in a lot of these guys, just as it is for players, that you can make a living at this. I love this sport. I love sports broadcasting. I didn't know that those two could combine in my lifetime. And even more so now, as I mentioned, with all of the countries around the globe that have their sport broadcast here, I think there's a lot of Americans, first generation, second generation, Mayflower Americans, if you will, that love this sport, that start to realize that, you know what, if I want to, if I'm willing to work hard enough, if I'm willing to make the sacrifices, if I'm willing to be humble enough to realize there is a learning curve and that you can't please everyone, there's an opportunity out there for you. And I think we see that at BN Sports. You see it at all of the other networks where there is now a mix. There is a certain something to listening to this sport with an English accent. But even over there, I guess John Champion is probably the closest to like the Motson Tyler line. But there's a lot of other broadcasters out there that maybe take it a little bit more over the top. One of the guys on Talk Sport you mentioned, Tom Rennie, who I love to listen to, is just phenomenal. And he's not just the guy that sits in the corner of the library and whispers people's names while the game is going on. So, again, for me, the sport aspect, regardless of whatever accent you come to the sport with, is to respect the sport, to respect the audience, to realize it is entertainment as well. It's, in all honesty, most of the time, it's not life and death. I think that's one of the reasons why I got over from news. A little easier to sleep at night when your team loses than compared to some of the other things that go on in other jobs. So, again, it is entertainment. To be entertaining, don't be boring. At the same point, realize how much this sport means to the people that are taking time out of their day to tune in and listen. Respect them and respect the sport. And eventually, if you do all of that, it doesn't matter what accent you have. I think that most soccer fans will accept you.
I think there was a trend a couple years ago where the American networks were shifting towards like the British announcers. Now I've been seeing the trend back to the American, like the whole announcer thing. So it's been like really interesting how things are a little bit shifting back to home. I like that.
Well, again, in Canada, even with guys like Luke Wildman, I think Arlo does a good job. I think you take a look at Kevin Egan, who's now jumping up to do some of these Atlanta games with his mellifluous Irish accent. Again, it's a love and a knowledge of the sport. And if you can convey the story, because that's really what we are. We are storytellers. We're just telling the story as it's happening. But if you can kind of sense the drama, build the drama, find the storylines, tie it all together, and do so without hopefully being too, because again, you're not the story, the game is the story. But if you can add to that experience, I think you'll be fine regardless of where you were born.
What has it been like working with Ray Hudson?
Well, as I mentioned, growing up down here, that's when I really started to fall in love with the sport. I loved all of the other sports, I wouldn't say equally, but I appreciated the drama that sport provides. But all of a sudden, when the Strikers came and I had the chance to go and watch these superstars that I've been watching on TV play in my own neighborhood, it was something. And Ray was one of them. And admittedly, you had guys like Cruyff and Best and Pelé, Beckenbauer around. You had even down here the likes of a Gerd Müller and Nene Kubilius. They all were recognized and appreciated, but this little teenager that came over from Newcastle before he really had the chance to burst onto the scene over there was able to keep up with them stride for stride and be better than most of them. And he had a love for the game, just that personality that broke through the field into the stands and into your home if you were watching on television. That was Ray, and he's one of the reasons that I did fall in love with this sport. And then later on, to get the chance to work with him and kind of realize that was not a persona. I mean, that really was Ray, and he's the type of guy that can just walk into a room and it's like someone just flips the light switch. And the funny thing is he's the type of guy that would be just as comfortable sitting at home on his recliner with a pizza in one hand, a beer in the other, and the remote watching his big screen TV. But he has a personality that just engages everyone. And as I said, you don't want to be boring. There's some out there that can't stand him. Most people love him, but he is always entertaining and always lifts an emotion. So getting the chance to work next to him. I've had to, personally, you mentioned announcing, I've had to change the way I call games because when I'm on my own or when I'm working with someone else, maybe I'm a little bit more over the top, but if I did that and tried to top Ray, it would probably be like a neutron bomb and might scare everyone away as well. So let Ray be Ray, try and build the skeleton for him to hang the flesh on, and it's been a thrill because, again, like I said, it's real. His passion for this sport is real, and that makes its way through the microphone and into the households of the people that are listening. They can sense that, and I think that's one reason they love him.
For English soccer, you guys bring the most energy of all the broadcasts and maybe over top the Spanish ones.
Again, I appreciate that. It's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, as I said, find what the storyline of the game is. You're not sitting in a library. It's always something new every game. So, again, it's been a pleasure working with him, and I hope it's something that lasts for a long time.
You guys covered La Liga primarily. How do you see the Liga this year? Is it Barcelona wrapped it up already?
This past weekend went a long way, but I think we were ready to hand the trophy over to them back in December, and Atletico made a push. You think about it, there's still the Clásico coming up, and we've got that, by the way. It's a little bit better than the 6 o'clock kickoff. It's going to be noon Pacific and right about 3 p.m., just a little before 3 p.m. here on the East Coast. So a little bit more likely that people will be able to watch directly, perhaps rather than just DVR it. But if Real Madrid can go into the Nou Camp and come away with 3 points, and Atletico keeps winning, now all of a sudden it's down to 5 points. But you have to ask yourself, over those other 10 games, can Barcelona stumble twice more than Atletico? And I'm not sure. So I think that for all the criticism that Valverde has drawn, I do think that there is also an acknowledgement from most that they are still alive in the race for the 3 titles that they're focused in on right now. They have a very limited roster at the moment by design, and he's done a good enough job to keep them unbeaten through the league season and progressing in the Cup and in Europe. And maybe it takes Messi to be that little something extra, but that's one of the reasons that that they've been able to hold on to him and value him so much. And I think Barcelona is to lose. I think at this point it might take a miracle for Atletico to climb back in, but there's other battles going on. I mean, you take a look, the race for that fourth Champions League spot, the race for the sixth and seventh Europa League spots, the race against relegation, which went topsy-turvy again this past week. So I think this is going to go all the way down to 38. While the number one spot might be a pretty safe bet to say it's Barcelona, as far as all of the others go, there's still going to be a battle, I think, all the way to the end.
And do you think Manchester City has wrapped this up?
I think Manchester City wrapped this up around November. The scary thing is the fact that I think they can get even better. I think when you take a look, I was talking to my son, who's a huge fan, not so much of City, he's a Chelsea fan, so I must have dropped him on his head as a youngster. But he loves this sport, and he was talking about Manchester City, and we got talking about Bayern Munich, and in some ways we were trying to figure out where Pep would be, what's going on with Vieira, does he go to Arsenal, but I think Vieira's kind of lined up to replace Pep in 2 or 3 years, maybe when he slides over to take Spain. There's a difference with Manchester City. I mean, Pep left after a relatively short time at Barcelona, left after a relatively short time at Bayern. I think it's going to be a little longer at City. Barcelona, he stepped into an established team, brought up the youngsters, wanted to test himself, goes to Bayern, where it was a very established team, tried a few wrinkles here or there, had some success, maybe not as much as they were used to in the past, but looked good and maybe pretty much took Bayern Munich into the next generation. But it was an older club. What he's done here with Manchester City, he hasn't thrown away the old leaders on this team, but he's brought in a lot of young talent. And I think it's not really until that young talent hits its maturity, they are established stars, the likes 27, 28, 29, 30 years of age, that they start to revolt against the coach. Hey, we've done this before. We're tired of hearing this. Okay, you're saying that again. I'm zoning out. We saw that a little bit at Bayern in the tail end. I think we saw it even more with Ancelotti this past year. I think at Manchester City, he's been smart enough to bring in younger players who have still a lot more room to go before they hit their ceilings. So, again, from a EPL perspective, they are far and away the class of the league, and he's proven that it can be done there. I think they can get even better as the years progress. So it's going to take a lot of effort for the likes of a Chelsea, a United, a Liverpool, hopefully eventually an Arsenal, to be able to challenge them again. But I think that what Pep has done is shown that it's not just smash, bang, wallop, that if you can control the play and take advantage of your opportunities, create your opportunities almost at will, when you have those special players. I mean, it wasn't cheap. They spent $500 million, and that's pretty much pocket money, you might say. But they spent that money wisely. You take a look at some of the other teams that have spent big money, and they're still struggling to hold on to Champions League spots or maybe be a distant contender here or there. But Manchester City spent money, spent it wisely, and now they're making that good talent even better.
Okay, hypotheticals here. If Jose Mourinho gets United to the Champions League and wins it, who is a better manager, Mourinho or Pep?
It comes down to the judgment, the value judgment of trophies versus aesthetics. I think what Pep Guardiola has proven in his career is that the two are not mutually exclusive. But your hypothesis, I would still say it's Pep when you take a look at what's been going on the marathon of the EPL season and what has happened between City and United on the field. So Jose Mourinho can still lay claim to winning trophies. And the thing with the Champions League, so much of it depends on the draw. Who knows what happens if they end up drawing each other in the next round? It might be a little bit anticlimactic. I think that United's best hope is getting a favorable draw until the final, where it is winner take all, to basically shut down a Barcelona, shut down a Real Madrid, or shut down a Manchester City over two matches is a little harder than when Jose was succeeding at Inter. 0-0, 0-0, added time goal, he wins. That's not going to happen nowadays that much. So I think that he does have his accomplishments. I wonder, not so much fire, but he's a different manager than he was back in those Inter days, back than he was in that first stint at Chelsea. And he's a much more controlling manager, even more so than then. When you take a look at some of the issues that are going on, the way he's been using Paul Pogba, etc., you can sense, you listen to some of the complaints that were going on at Bayern Munich with Thomas Müller and the like, but I think that he's learned and is a better manager than he was 2, 3, 5 years ago. And part of that, again, is finding a way to keep players contributing and we'll see what happens in the long run, but for me, it's more than just the title. It is the product you put on the field. But as an Arsenal fan, I also do know it's pretty nice to have the title as a goal as well, and hopefully something that they'll be able to compete for in a while. And the difficult part to swallow is maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago, Pep Guardiola could have been signed to be managing Arsenal, and that would not have been that far of a stretch. So, again, I think that what Pep has done in his stops to this point has been phenomenal, and I don't think he's done yet.
We'll see what happens. It's March, and it's approaching. Ready for some random questions?
Let's go for it.
How do you have your pancakes?
My pancakes? Actually, trying to go NSNG right now, trying to do a little keto, so I'm not, which is a little hard, especially on the waffles. But when I did, if I wanted to do it right and I wasn't just being lazy, little bit of butter and some maple syrup. Keep it nice and easy.
What job you would not be good at?
Pretty much everything but what I do. Best of my ability, but I think the one thing is something repetitive where it's over and over. I think I'd be lousy in a factory line, that I need something new. And that's one reason I love soccer. I love sports especially, but soccer. Every game, there's something new. I learn something from every game. So I want something that's going to continually challenge me. I can understand the rote, the routine. I probably have a little obsessive compulsive in my path, in the right spot here or there. But then when it comes time to actually go to work, I need the change.
Should people wear their team jerseys to work?
Depends where they work. But I don't think that would go over too well at the White House.
And what is your favorite mustard?
Again, when I was going to school at Bowling Green, I got introduced to stadium mustard up in Municipal Stadium. I'm sure they still have it over at the new stadiums in Cleveland. There's something about that stadium mustard. I can take a good Dijon. French is in the bottle.
That's awesome.
Things slip between the cracks, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why I try and stay available. So if anyone wants to ask questions, be it Twitter, Facebook, or wherever, more than open to start a conversation.
Phil, thank you very much for coming on the Sportscast.
Anytime, Santi.
Have a good day.